by revealing and disclosing our lack of faith and practice before the Buddha. We could also say, instead of before the Buddha, if Buddha is the boundless space of awareness, we can reveal and disclose our lack of faith within the Buddha. Before the Buddha almost sounds like we're putting Buddha a little bit outside ourselves. Big mind Buddha, we reveal our lack of faith and practice within you. We tend to want to keep our lack of faith and practice a little bit outside of Buddha. We don't want to taint our idea of Buddha with our lack of faith and practice. Therefore, we think, when I get over this lack of faith and practice, then I can present myself to Buddha. We want to keep our karmic stuff a little bit outside pure Buddha. At least I have seen such a tendency. We want to find the big mind, big space of awareness, free of all this obsessive thinking and self-judgment or whatever else comes up, karmically produced stuff. So I put it a little bit outside. If I can just calm down this thinking mind, then I'll be able to find Buddha. But what about revealing and disclosing our lack of faith and lack of practice within Buddha? In fact, it seems it's where it already is. Nothing is excluded from this big awareness. Since it's already not excluded, why try to exclude it? I think this is one way we can look at confession and repentance, or revealing and disclosing lack of faith, is let it arise within Buddha mind. It's just our lack of faith in practice is just dependently arisen appearances due to past causes and conditions and karmically arisen tendencies. And if we try to put it outside of Buddha, then we kind of reify it. We hypostatize it. Whereas if it's just dependently arisen appearances, therefore it's not something to grasp or separate from this awareness. If we don't reveal and disclose it within Buddha, then we separate the two truths of our dependently arisen karmic tendency, appearances of lack of faith and so on, and Buddha. You see how we can so easily, I think we do, tend to try to separate them. It could be quite subtle. It could just be like even just trying to calm our thinking mind so that we can then find this peaceful space of awareness. If we could just eliminate the clouds from the sky, then we could enjoy the pure, clear sky. But the clouds actually don't really hinder the sky. They're made out of the sky. Revealing and disclosing the clouds within the sky, we melt away the root of transgressions, of faults, of what we take to be our solid faults. The root of them is to try to like exclude them from the sky, we could say. The root that holds them firmly in place is the belief that they are real and therefore have to be destroyed in order to enjoy the sky. Revealing and disclosing them within the big space of sky-like awareness, the root is cut or dissolves. We could also say, if we just attend more to the sky, then the clouds of our lack of faith, clouds, can still be there, but they're not so solid. If we're attending to the space that they're arising and ceasing within. But if we're attending to our lack of faith and really getting worked up about it, then we just miss the sky that they're already arising in. So, by this revealing and disclosing, this kind of confession and repentance, we melt this root of transgressions by the power of our repentance. This is the pure and simple color of true practice, of authentic practice, of the true trusting mind, of the true trusting body. Our translation here says, the true mind of faith, the true body of faith, but in fact it's the exact same xin xin as the xin xin ming. The true or authentic trusting mind, the true or authentic trusting body, this letting the clouds of our self-doubt and self-criticism arise and cease within the big sky-like empty sky. So this confession, this kind of repentance, we could say is one aspect of the trusting mind. We've been looking at the song of the trusting mind. And investigating what is this trust or faith or confidence. Dogen says in the Gakudo Yojinshu, those who practice the Buddha way should first of all trust in the Buddha way. Those who trust in the Buddha way should trust that they are, by their very nature, within the Buddha way, where there is no delusion, no false thinking, no confusion, no increase or decrease, and no mistake. We might not feel such a thing, but can we trust that we're within the Buddha way, where there's no delusion and confusion, increase or decrease, no mistakes? To arouse such trust, Dogen says, and illuminate the way in this manner and to practice accordingly are fundamental in studying the way. We do this by sitting, which cuts the root, or melts away the root of dualistic thinking. Trust in Dogen's teaching is paramount. And we develop it by sitting and sitting and sitting, letting our lack of faith in practice arise without trying to hide it away or somehow eliminate it. Reveal it within Buddha's mind where there's no mistakes. Also on the topic of trust, Lin Ji said, "What I teach people just requires you not to take on the confusions of others. If you need to act, then act without any further hesitation or doubt. When Zen students today do not realize this, where is the problem? The problem is in not naturally trusting. If you do not trust yourself completely, you will then hurriedly go along with whatever happens in all situations, and you cannot be independent. It's just because practitioners do not trust completely that they seek outwardly." He says, trust yourself. And again, we could hear this, your big self. Trust the big mind so much that it is totally willing to include lots of petty thoughts and feelings and dependently arisen appearances of karmic sludge. So, the song of the trusting mind, as you may have heard, begins, "The great way is not difficult for those who hold no preferences." We heard various comments about this phrase by Zen teacher Zhao Zhou yesterday, and Zen teacher Dogen also comments on this phrase. Taigen Layton, my elder Dharma brother, when translating this record of extensive record of Dogen, made up his own little titles for each of these little sayings, and it is kind of somewhat creative way. So the title of this section is called "The Pickiness of Garudas." A Garuda is a an Indian Buddhist mythical bird that what can we say about Garudas? They like to eat Nagas. Nagas are like these serpent-like, snake-like creatures. Also in Indian Buddhist and probably pre-Buddhist mythology. The Nagas are the ones who helped Nagarjuna upload all the Prajnaparamita sutras from the bottom of the ocean, because they're good swimmers, the Nagas. But they also, I think they're kind of a mixed bag, these Nagas. They help middleway expounders like Nagarjuna, but they also, I think they cause skin diseases, and they're kind of like, they have some negative qualities too, and so Garudas are helping to protect the Dharma, so particularly the disease-causing Nagas, the Garudas munch on them and eat them up to keep them from causing human disease. Without going further into the story, that's my recollection of... So, do you know anything more about Garudas or Nagas? Everything has to do with water. So maybe particularly waterborne diseases and water pollution. The pickiness of Garudas. Dogen, in a Dharma talk, said, here is a statement. The third ancestor, great teacher, Jianjur Sung San, Kanji So San Dayosho, mirror wisdom, Sangha jewel, said, the great way is not difficult for those who hold no preferences. Then Dogen says, upon hearing this, people who do not understand might say, quote, all dharmas are without good and bad. Every action is neither harmful or upright. Simply trust your nature and stroll along. Following conditions, let go of everything. Therefore, with all good and bad, or harmful and beneficial, do not pick or choose or hold preferences, but just go on your way. Unquote. Some people who do not understand might say that. Sounded pretty good to me, don't you think? Dogen is so strict. Another, who doesn't really understand this, may say, quote, in order to not do this so-called holding preferences, do not speak using words. This can be done by simply making a circle, holding up a whisk, pounding a staff, throwing down a staff, clapping your hands, giving a shout, holding up a sitting cushion, or raising a fist. These are all actions that the old Zen teachers used to do. Yeah, like that. Holding up a zafu. Maybe even throwing a zafu. Very good, but actually I think Dogen says, this is not quite it either. Views like this, these two different views that Dogen mentions, do not depart from the cave of common beings. Suppose someone were to ask me, hey, what's the point of just hold no preferences? I would say to that person, a Garuda does not eat anything but raw Nagas. The Bodhisattva next in line for Buddhahood, Maitreya, is not born except in Tushita heaven. And Taigen and Shivaka Okamura's speculation is it's the Garuda's nature to eat raw nagas. It's not really like picking and choosing. It's just totally what they do. It's all they do. It's what they do. And Maitreya Buddha, to be born as the next Buddha, as part of Buddha's cosmology, is not born except in Tushita heaven. So he's residing in Tushita heaven, waiting to for the next Kalpa to come down and be the next Buddha. And there's no choice. It's just how it works, according to dependent co-arising. The Shakyamuni Buddha supposedly lived in Tushita heaven before he manifested in this world system to help beings on planet Earth, the Saha world of Jambudvipa. It's not like they actually have a choice. I think that's what is being pointed to here. Nagas some Nagas might wish to be vegan and not eat raw. Some Garudas might wish to be vegan, right? Not eat raw Nagas in their sushi. But for Garudas, there's no choice. There's really like, just like if we ask a lion to eat grass, it would not be able to. So this is not picking and choosing. This is not holding preferences. Dogen uses these traditional, colorful images from the tradition to point to just the way things dependently arise in this world, inescapably. Dependent co-arising cannot be escaped, and therefore just according with dependent co-arising is not holding preferences and not picking and choosing. For us, it might not seem so simple, right? For a Garuda, it's simpler. They just see a squirming Naga on the surface of the water, and they just, it's just time to eat it raw. And Maitreya Buddha, when the time is right, is born and lives in Tushita heaven, and when the time is right, appears on the earth, not even according to like their so-called free will. This is, I think, the understanding of these Buddha Shakyamuni, like to talk about these past Buddhas that all follow the same way. They all left home, and they all sat under the Bodhi tree, and they all, after all practicing austerities, and they all realized the way, and they all turned the wheel of Dharma. And it's not like they decided exactly to do this. It's the way of dependent arising, kind of miraculously. And all of us are like this too, are we not? Just the way we are right now, the way we are right now is completely free from holding any preference. But we can activate the mind around this and start thinking, it should be some other way. I think it was a mistake to come to this sesshin. Somebody made a mistake somewhere. How did I get here? There's no mistake. It can't be any other way. And then the next moment, it will be another way according to conditions. Where is the picking and choosing? Where is the holding preference? Even preferences naturally arise. We might even say that actually Garudas, in a way, prefer raw nagas over tofu. But then there's this extra little step of holding the preference. For them, it's not necessary to hold that preference. We might prefer, sometimes in sesshin, to be somewhere else, in a sunny field in the mountains or something. But that's just a dependently arisen preference. Then to hold it is to kind of like, it's to see it as not just a dependently arisen preference, it's to reify it. No, I really, really should be in the sunny field in the mountains right now. And kind of believe that, and then we're suffering. But the preference can arise. I don't think we have to stop preferences, but holding them. Dogen says, if someone were to ask me, what's the point of not holding preferences, I would say, a Garuda does not eat anything but raw dragons. The Bodhisattva next in line, Maitreya, is not born or not living except in Tushita heaven. That's the first line of the Song of the Trusting Mind. The great way is not difficult for those who hold no preferences. When longing and aversion are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Same thing. Longing and aversion are the two directions that we avoid the dependently arisen appearance of this experience right now. We will always have a dependently arisen experience as long as we are alive as sentient beings. Each moment there will be a dependently arisen mere experience, and sometimes we might have trouble according with it. It's hard sometimes. We have longing for something else other than this dependently arisen experience, or aversion to this dependently arisen experience. They're kind of the same thing, actually. Aversion to this one, longing for another one. But when that longing and aversion are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Just dependently arisen experience is nothing more than that. And then we can see the very nature of this dependently arisen experience is emptiness. There's nothing substantial here, essential in this experience. Nothing in this experience exists on its own. It's just a dependent arising. But with longing and aversion, we miss the dependent arising, and then we miss that's true nature. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. So, literally the smallest distinction in Chinese is like a hair's breadth difference. The breadth or width of a single hair, tiny, hair's breadth difference is as the distance between heaven and earth. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. Heaven and earth we could see as the realm of ease and joy and the toilsome, mundane world. Or we could also see as emptiness and form. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven is boundless, ungraspable, peaceful emptiness, and earth as dependently arisen form, seemingly solid and earthy. And if we make it, these two are never separate, but if we make the smallest distinction, these two are seem to be set infinitely apart. They're never infinitely apart. They seem to be. Smallest distinction, a hair's breadth deviation, is done with the discriminating mind, is it not? That's the only hair's breadth differences or distinctions that are made. There aren't actually distinctions other than conceptual ones. I think that's a kind of maybe simple, obvious point, but important one. There are no distinctions in the entire universe except those made by conceptual thinking mind. So we're to the third sentence, and already a bunch of people are commenting on it again. That's how this Song of the Trusting Mind is just so important, especially it's the first paragraph that the Zen ancients loved it and would pick up. Each of these sentences is such a perfectly complete practice instruction in itself. But also, we want to deeply understand each sentence. So the ancients brought them out in this way. Case 17 in the Book of Serenity is called Fayan's Hair's Breadth, or you could translate it as Fayan's Smallest Distinction. Fayan asked Xu Shan, a hair's breadth difference is as the distance between heaven and earth, quoting the Song of the Trusting Mind. This our third sentence. Or this, the make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. How do you understand? And Xu Shan said, make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. Fayan said, how can you get it that way? And Xu Shan said, I'm just thus, or that's just how I say it. What about you? Fayan said, make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. So yesterday, for those who were here, Zhao Zhou said a very similar kind of story where Zhao Zhou, a monk asked Zhao Zhou about picking and choosing the great ways without difficulty for those who hold no preferences. How can one not have preferences? And Zhao Zhou said, why don't you quote it fully? quote the poem fully. And the monk said, I only remember that much. And Zhaozhou said, it goes like this. The great way is not difficult for those who hold no preferences. So a lot of these koans involve this kind of repeating back the same thing in a fresh way, and it changes people. So this is like a triple whammy. Again, Fayan asked Xushan, make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are said infinitely apart. How do you understand this? Xushan said, make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are said infinitely apart. So, pretty good. Just, you know, if we try to explain, how do I understand this? Well, I understand that they're like heaven's over here and earth's over here, and make this distinction, and that's just making a whole bunch of distinctions, right? What's the most direct, non-distinction-making response? Boom! Right back at you. So, pretty good. The story could have ended there. Maybe in some versions it would just have ended there. But actually, Fayan pushed further here and said, well, how can you get it that way? This is, might even be a little bit critical of the third ancestor, say, who coined the sentence in the first place. We might say this, how can you get it that way? We might interpret as like, don't words actually create the distinctions in the first place? Isn't that very sentence, no matter how purely and spontaneously you said it, doesn't that very sentence about distinctions create distinctions? I mean, why didn't you just slap me instead? He might have said. And Xushan very nicely didn't defend himself or anything. He just said, that's how I said it. I'm just thus. What about you? How can you top that? And Fayan said, a hair's breadth difference is the distance between heaven and earth. Or make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. Xushan thereupon bowed, accepting their conclusion of their conversation. So it's a little like we might say, good answer to just repeat back this phrase just as it is, but then this little test, but isn't that still making a distinction? And is he going to get caught and say, oh yeah, he's right, I actually should have slapped him, or he caught me speaking again. But actually it sounds like maybe he had a little doubt, but maybe no. He just said, well, how would you put it? And Fayan, after kind of criticizing, how can you get it that way? He says it exactly the same way. Right? Kind of implying that words spoken without any grasping don't actually divide heaven and earth, don't actually make real distinctions in this undivided space of suchness. Words are the only thing, words and concepts are the only thing that can make the distinctions, but words and concepts can be used freely in this way. Without reifying them, without hypostatization. This new word some of us learned recently that means something like to create reality out of concepts, something like that, I think. To project a kind of essence or reality onto things using the conceptual mind. Hypostasization. A very rare word in our language. So that's like a little exploration of this third line. I think Dogen's got some too. Luckily, every line in the poem doesn't have a commentary to it. So, you may have heard Bodhidharma has this phrase describing his brand new patented super glue called Zen. His first the label on the first bottle of Zen said that Bodhidharma wrote this label. Said a separate transmission outside the sutras, not depending on words and letters, pointing directly to the human mind, seeing true nature becoming Buddha. It's a nice summary of Zen from the founder of Zen, really. It was different. There's something new. There was something new here in China, on this coming onto the scene of Buddha Dharma that had been like floating around China for 500 years already. This is something new, a separate transmission outside the sutras, pointing directly to the human mind, seeing nature becoming Buddha. So Dogen takes that phrase of Bodhidharma and takes this sentence from the Song of the Trusting Mind, kind of creatively, and divides both of them in half, like this. Directly pointing to the human mind is like heaven and earth set infinitely apart. Seeing true nature becoming Buddha is making the smallest distinction or a hair's breadth deviation. Yeah, directly pointing to the human mind is like the separation between heaven and earth. Infinitely separating heaven and earth. Surprising to hear that, isn't it? Seeing true nature and becoming Buddha is this hair's breadth deviation, or making a slightest distinction. Surprising. Because this is so direct, Bodhidharma's seems like non-discriminating statement, pointing directly to the human mind. Forget about words and letters. Point directly to the nature of mind. See true nature and be Buddha right now. So, very like positive, non-discriminating statement, if there ever was one. And now Dogen's kind of pairing it up with this kind of like negative statement about make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. It's just Dogen's again, a strictness, we might say. Directly pointing to the human mind is like a separation between heaven and earth. Seeing nature and becoming Buddha is the slightest distinction. Then Dogen says, why is this so? Great assembly, do you want to clearly understand the meaning of this? After a pause, Dogen said, Mahakasapa's face breaking into a smile has not yet ceased. He gives it to you straight, doesn't he? You know the story of Mahakasapa, when Buddha held up the flower and Mahakasapa smiled, and that was the first Zen transmission. And so Dogen says, Mahakasapa's face breaking into a smile has not yet ceased. The curl of his smile, millimeter by millimeter, grows and grows, century by century, the infinite smile increases, we might say, or never ceases. We might also say, it's a work in progress. It's a work in progress, and pointing directly to the human mind, seeing nature, becoming Buddha, we don't want to like settle down in this as some definitive thing. Bodhidharma said it, I got it. The essence of Zen. Instead, Dogen, in his strict moment, you might say, says, even this kind of phrase of Bodhidharma is making distinctions and we might say quite subtly separating heaven and earth. How so? Just the very fact that it comes in words, and if we're grasping the words, that's not it. And it may also be that Dogen was elsewhere sometimes critical of this phrase, seeing nature, becoming Buddha. In Japanese, Kensho Jo Butsu. Kensho means seeing nature, and is emphasized strongly in the Rinzai Zen tradition. And though Dogen may sometimes use that phrase, I can't remember exactly where, but there's one point where Dogen is somewhat critical of this because of speaking that way. Because it's kind of implying that there's something to see. It can sound like the very act of seeing kind of implies there's something you don't see now that you have to see. And we might say there's a Buddha that you're not now that you have to become. It's somewhat dualistic. And Dogen's always looking for a slight trace of duality. There's something we have to see and something we have to become, rather than everything raising a foot and blinking an eye is actualizing the fundamental point. So maybe this is a nice way that he comments on a hair's breadth difference, because we're making big distinctions all the time. We obviously see big distinctions definitely divide heaven and earth, divide dependently arisen appearances from their totally empty essence. Divide delusion and enlightenment. We make all kinds of big divisions, but make the smallest distinction, a hair's breadth difference. If we put our lack of faith and practice a little bit outside of our practice, a little bit outside of our trusting mind. I actually can't trust this lack of faith. If I can just get over it and arouse some true trust, these are maybe more like subtle distinctions that we tend to make. The great way is not difficult for those who hold no preferences, where longing and aversion are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. If you wish to see the truth, then hold no opinion for or against. The struggle of likes and dislikes is the disease of the mind. No, I can't remember other ones offhand.
I mean, it's very direct and kind of startling.
Yeah, we might put a dash in the middle and say the dis-ease, the unease of the mind. The struggle of likes and dislikes is the uneasiness of mind, for sure. Isn't it so? This is just the most to the point Sesshin instructions we could ever ask for, are they not? We don't need anything more than these lines to sit here. Just, you know, I think the main danger is then to think, well, I am making these discriminations and distinctions, and I am holding opinions, and I am creating right and wrong and good and bad, and my mind is in dis-ease, but then not to try to stop all that, because we can't really, that creates more of the same, as the poem later go on to say. It's so counterintuitive to just snuggle up with these dependently arisen appearances. This icky feeling of like, I just can't do it. I can't do Sesshin. I'm a failure. I can't stop thinking. Have you ever had that thought? and it's the same old stuff. How about a new one once in a while? Or it's a new one, but like none of these thoughts are any more settling than any others, and like totally random. Why am I thinking about spaghetti? Is there any way to control all of this? No. But snuggle up with might mean like, okay, you're okay. You can be here. We might say, this is the big space talking. This is the sky talking to the clouds. You clouds can be here in me. You're actually like, in my belly, and you're churning around in my belly, and you're creating some tension, and some of you clouds are getting like dark black, and there's lightning, and you're clashing up against each other and causing thunder and shaking the earth itself, but the sky can still say, I'm really big. So, no matter how black and stormy you clouds get, you don't ever harm me, the sky. Go ahead and do your thing, because it's dependently arisen anyway. If conditions arise for a storm will happen. The weather reporters tell us that the conditions are such for a cloudy day. They can even predict the conditions. We can't say, well, if they predict it, then couldn't we stop it before it happens? Nope. The weather is the weather. Garudas eat raw nagas. and Maitreya just has to hang out in Tushita heaven for like eons, maybe, at least billions and billions of years. It's apparently really beautiful up there. It's like a, you know, it's the jewels are like growing on the trees, and the birds are all singing sutras, and the ground is made of lapis lazuli and all that. But still, billions and billions of years. What?
Enough
already. Sorry, Maitreya, you just have to wait until this kalpa is completely destroyed. Which we're working well on this these days. It might be soon when the life on earth ceases and all traces of Shakyamuni's Buddha Dharma are gone, then Maitreya can finally come here. Conditions, 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 conditions. We dedicate any merit arising from our practice of Sesshin to the complete awakening of all beings. May they realize inconceivable freedom and joy in the vast ocean of eternal brightness. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.